gets me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
It's time for Abandoned Manitoba with Gordon Goldsborough, and a slightly different kind of Abandoned Manitoba today. Hi, Gordon.
Good morning, Nadia.
So what are we talking about today?
Well, in our previous conversations, I've taken a few jabs at the notion that artificial intelligence, AI, can master Manitoba history. I personally am not inclined to trust an AI's answer unless I can prove it independently. And so today, I have another example. I recently asked Microsoft Copilot, one of the AIs, the following question. Has anyone ever died in the Manitoba Legislative Building? Well, it assured me no confirmed case exists. Well, I wouldn't have asked the question if I didn't already know the answer. Yes, there have been such cases. But before we dive into the details, a quick note to listeners. If conversations about death are not your cup of tea, now may be a good time to fetch one.
Okay, that's a good warning for people. So what is the answer to your question?
I did find a story in the Winnipeg Free Press published in 2012, and it claimed that a case in 1947 was, and this is a direct quote, the only confirmed death in the Manitoba Legislative Building. However, I have found at least three deaths that occurred there, and actually maybe four, all of them men. And for a reason that I'll explain later, I'm not going to identify any of them by name.
So tell us about those cases.
Well, I'll start with the earliest one. It was in January 1929, which, by the way, was just 8.5 years after the legislative building opened. A 72-year-old provincial civil servant had a fatal heart attack while walking in a corridor to his office in the building. He was the revenue auditor for the government. I don't really know what that job means. I guess you just keep track of the money coming in and make sure it all jibes. Don't really know for sure. But he'd had this position since 1915. So he'd been in the job for quite a long time. He didn't die instantly, and he was laying on the floor, and they actually called the Deputy Minister of Health, who it turned out was a medical doctor, and he was summoned from across the hall, but by that time it was too late. The fellow was buried in the cemetery at Winnipeg's St. John's Cathedral, and the next death would occur 18 years later under what I think are somewhat more mysterious circumstances.
How mysterious?
Well, the deceased was a 54-year-old veteran of the First World War. He had been a practicing lawyer after his return from military duty, and in 1920, he was appointed the deputy provincial treasurer. So again, a financial connection, one responsible for making sure that the overall finances of the government run smoothly. And he served in this position for more than 26 years. In fact, was well involved in all sorts of things. For example, in the 1930s, he played a key role in compiling data for the provincial government's submission to a public inquiry that was examining the financial and constitutional sort of balance of power between the federal and the provincial government, and this, which led and ultimately to changes in the way the feds and the provinces interacted with one another. So he put data together for Manitoba's submission. So, you know, a key civil servant. However, in February of 1947, his secretary in the legislative building was startled to hear a gunshot in the washroom of his private office. He was found lying on the floor, deceased. It was said that his job was a stressful one, that he had been in maybe indifferent health for some months, and that, in fact, he had lost over 20 pounds in weight. So, you know, maybe there were some medical conditions there that nobody quite knew. Well, no inquest was held, and no explanation was ever found for the suicide. He was buried in Elmwood Cemetery.
Do we know if this was the only suicide in the building?
As far as I can tell, yes. The next death occurred in April 1956. It involved a 60-year-old director of preventive medical services in the Department of Health and Public Welfare. He was a leading figure in the fight against polio. Many listeners will remember that in the early 1950s, a lot of children were afflicted with it, and he helped make the Salk vaccine available to children across Manitoba. No specific cause of death was given in the case, but I think the abruptness with which it occurred, in fact, it occurred in his office in the legislative building, to me at least suggests some sort of cardiac event. He was buried in the Chapel Lawn Memorial Gardens.
So that was three. What's the last case?
You know what? It may be the most cryptic of the four. In August 1967, a very short article appeared in a Winnipeg newspaper. It reported that an unidentified 31-year-old man had fallen to his death from the third floor of the building to the basement in one of the building's main stairwells. In other words, he had fallen to his death. Education Minister George Johnson, also a medical doctor, well, he was called out of a cabinet meeting to attend the incident. And it sounds very dire, but in fact, the following day, the newspaper issued a correction, and it stated that the man had simply fallen down some steps and had died from internal bleeding. Now, as in previous cases, the medical doctor among the building's politicians again was called, in this case, Mr. Johnson, Dr. Johnson. This time, the deceased was identified in the follow-up article, and this in turn allowed me to find an obituary in subsequent newspapers. And this is where the cryptic part comes in, because although it sounded like from the newspaper articles that the fellow had died in the building, the obituary stated that the person had died at the Winnipeg General Hospital. And I guess that would make sense if he wasn't completely dead and they'd taken him to the hospital and he'd subsequently passed away there. But if that's accurate, then of course it means that the count is three, not four. But I think what is clear from all of this, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty, but what is clear is that 2012 newspaper story claiming only one death in the building's 106-year-old history was indeed incorrect.
So you managed to find an accurate answer to your original question. Why didn't AI?
Well, I think it's because in order to know something about the world, AIs must have data on which they can be trained. Anything that can be found from a search on the public internet is probably part of the training for most AIs. But if the answer is not online, or if it's in a place that the AI cannot access, such as I think in this example, well, then the AI won't know it. I found these deaths using historical newspapers, and at least so far as I know, AI has not been trained using the contents of historical newspapers. I can only imagine what might happen if they become that way, and we'll wait and see. And I want to just say, too, that although the Manitoba Historical Society has an extensive collection of biographical sketches of noteworthy people, we almost never include the cause of death in them.
And why is that?
Well, I think in most cases, the cause of death doesn't add very much to our understanding of a person's life or their legacy. And I think it can very likely unintentionally shift attention away from their accomplishments. I think it also respects the dignity of the individual and the privacy of families by not mentioning it. And I think it steers clear of needless sensationalism or stigma. You know, in the case of a suicide, that can really sometimes bring stigma to a case. So I think the goal of our biographies is to remember people for what they did, not for the circumstances of their final moments. So in today's four cases, you'll note, I purposely omitted their names. And I offer this sad topic only to illustrate a limitation of artificial intelligence. So in this case, Copilot was wrong when it said that no confirmed case exists. There were at least three that I was able to find. You know, and so, you know, that's what you have to be careful about. And I think what should prompt us to wonder is, well, if it gets this kind of thing wrong, what other details is it getting wrong and therefore misinform us about? So in my advice to listeners remains the same. Always, always, always be skeptical about Manitoba historical information that you get from an AI. There are, in my view, many more reliable sources out there. I would offer the website of the Manitoba Historical Society. We do make mistakes. We're not perfect, but we back up our assertions with cited research. We acknowledge mistakes when we find them, and we promptly correct them. So I think that's more than what AIs will do.
Gordon, thank you so much for this. Spoken like a true historian and professor. what's coming up for next week?
Well, we're going to look at several of Winnipeg's former, and this is a quote, comfort stations. And you probably know what that means. They've mostly disappeared from the landscape, but not from the city's lore, which is, I think, proof that even our old public toilets can offer a surprising flush of nostalgia.
Oh, God. I'll let you have that one. Thanks, Gordon.
Bye-bye for now.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba. Many moons